So I first wanted to thank you for being here and for trying to improve the transparency about what's going on in Juneau for all of us here on the peninsula. So it's a tough climate. I appreciate you being here. A lot of you know I'm a physician in the community. I work really hard to practice evidence-based medicine, where I look at what the research and the science tells us about how to make the best decisions. And I wanted to ask the two of you, how are you personally going to commit to be sure that the decisions you're making in Juneau are based on the facts and the best evidence and the science as you're making these tough decisions?
So if I understand your question accurately, I'm thinking about my time on the finance committees and all the subcommittees that were meetings that we're going to have on finance, and getting to the root of what the right thing to do is asking the right questions, asking good questions, requiring facts-based questions to get those answers. I guess my commitment to you is that I'm going to use facts to help form my judgment as to which direction to go. And this is something that I had a chance to speak to the governor about last week. This isn't just a discussion this year about this year's budget. This is also a discussion of where the state's going in the next 10 years. And what I don't understand right now, and what I'm going to keep hammering on, is a vision from the executive branch on how we're going to do state government into the future. This budget is he calls it a transformational budget. But it is right. This is significantly different than we've had in the past. So what's the vision going forward? How do we fund ourselves? What services do we provide for the next 10 years? Not just for this fiscal season, okay? That's got to start with facts and priorities, right? Elected officials create policy, and those policy decisions should drive where we find that money and where we spend that money. So let's get to that point. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's my best stab at it.
Well, and I'll touch on it as well. Is it on? What does red mean?
It's on.
Red means on? And I these photos are going to be interesting. It's like, what is the deal with the bowls? But Dr. Mitchell, you ask a great question. I've had that budget for 4 years, and I think we've been careful. I think we have been inquisitive. I've learned more about Medicaid than I've ever wanted to learn. I have no interest in Medicaid. I hate it. It is very complicated. Everything you change shifts with unintended consequences if you don't move carefully, which is why I know this isn't a cut. It's not a cut. We have Medicaid requirements that are prescribed by the feds that we can't, we can eventually say we're not going to accept Medicaid, but then it shifts to emergency care, and we're going to pay it here on the Kenai. You have to manage it very carefully, but I think we have a lot to do on understanding, is it possible for us to have a Seattle plus cost basis in Alaska as opposed to something that's completely off the charts? Why does a knee joint cost $3,500 in Seattle and $11,000 the minute it arrives here? And there's so many things that we have to look at, but we have waste and we have excesses and we have things that we can deal with. I think that's a couple to $300 million without changing the delivery of critical services. The other efficiencies are going to take more time. But we pay an exorbitant amount compared to anywhere else that's off the charts. And I'm tired of Alaska saying it costs more here. We had the last meeting was with Wildwood. It's all here's housing prisoners in Alaska cost more in Alaska. Well, it's like, why? I've not seen a comprehensive budget that really explains why it costs more, if it's defensible, and what we can do to change that. So I think we have a long way to go. Do I think the $700 million is going to result in $700 million in cuts? I don't think it's going to result in any if you don't contain those other cost drivers within Medicaid that are going to make a difference. So, yes. Could I have just said yes and that would have been sufficient? Thank you.
Hi. Thanks both for being here. My question, I've heard it said a lot that we have a spending problem, which I tend to agree with, and I've also heard it said that, you know, cutting spending and growing the economy are our only ways out of this problem. And I guess the question I would have is, or statement, however you want to take it, it seems to me that we have what you would call a structural deficit, and in that we can't grow our way out of it. And when you face a deficit like that and a budget like that, you have to attack it from both ends, which is income and expenditures. And it seems like the new budget is a good starting point for that, and it seems to acknowledge that in that it strips hundreds of millions of dollars away from the local municipalities and is going to force them to have that conversation. And I'm just wondering if you are willing to have the conversation about how do we diversify revenue. I mean, we can grow the economy all we want, but if we're reliant 70%, 90% on oil, unless it's an oil-based economy, unless you're growing oil in the number of drilling rigs, you're not gonna gain anything from that.
I'll go first.
I think we're probably saying the same thing. If I'm looking at revenue comes in multiple forms, can come in multiple forms. Revenue to the state. So we got a sales tax, we got property tax, you got flat tax, business tax, corporate tax. So what is the combination that we need going forward for the next 10 years that is stable for the economy that we have? If we've got all our eggs in one basket and funding only 70 cents out of every dollar or whatever that figure is from the oil company, then when that's cyclical, it causes problems within the state. If we look at it growing the economy, I'm not talking about just oil. I'm talking about things that are not oil related growing from this state, fish being one of them, other resources being one of them, new businesses that don't even exist right now being the other. And those are new taxable enterprises that help build the economy. I'm not talking about just relying on an increase in oil development, although that can help. For the long term, we should be diversifying our economy and funding the government from a more diverse agriculture.
So you talked about some real numbers, and here's some real numbers in regard to education. The state of Alaska spends some $1.6 billion on education. That breaks down to about just shy of $21,000 per student. Our school system sucks. We have Planned Parenthood, which has come out and said flat out that they do abortion first. That's what matters to them. That's their initiative, and yet they are in our school systems here. So my question is,
hold on, hey. Guys.
Those are the facts.
Hey,
they
welcome to Juneau. If one person can't share their opinion and everybody let them, then welcome to Juneau. He's got the mic, and he has just as much right to speak as the rest of you.
But you can go to the Department of Education. Those are the facts, and yet our school system is not doing well in every metric for graduation, for retention, for test scores, whatever have you. They're not doing well. And then you have the state of Utah, which spends just shy of $7,000 per student, and yet they consecutively tend to rank in the top 10. My question is how are we actually going to improve our education system, because money's not the problem if we're spending the second most in the United States? How are we actually going to fix that? How is it going to be better?
So I think
because money's not the issue.
Okay, we got that. I think that's an excellent question, but I just ask you not to lump all the school districts into one pie. Because the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District is used as a model around the state for what we're delivering here at one of the lowest costs per unit, because we've gone through the cuts. They've been very responsible on reductions. Across the state, you bet, there are districts, there are too many districts, there is too much on the upper end, there are reductions that can occur. We'd like to see more in the classroom. We can bring the cost down over time. So what's happened, unfortunately, we keep fixing it every year. Every year, we go ahead and fund it, right? And I'm not talking about our district, because I think you guys do an amazing job. My kids go to school in this district. I can tell you what kind of product that comes out of the district. But in other very poorly performing districts, we need to spend the time to sharing the best practices of places like the Kenai with some of the worst performing districts in the state. It's not about money. It's not about how much you pay someone, but I will tell you that it's, we can't fill the teaching positions we have right now. I did do a retire rehire bill last year to put 75-year-olds in the classroom because we can't fill our positions. So, not that that's bad for you 75-year-olds, but I think we have to put the pressure on to deliver a better product across the state. There are some, I mean, we should be much higher. We have problems in our state that a lot of states don't have. We are number one for ACEs, and that is caused by childhood sexual abuse, and it's caused by domestic violence, and it's caused by a lot of problems in parts of Alaska that you and I probably don't even want to hear about. It's very depressing. But it brings that cost up, and it makes it very difficult for them to concentrate in a classroom in many parts of the state. So it's not a simple solution. And there's not a correlation that if we cut education, we're going to get a better outcome. There's probably things that we should do to reward the best performing districts and perhaps reward the districts that are the worst performing that are willing to have the best performing districts mentor them into a better product. I think there's a lot that we can do. But I can tell you that 25% reduction in 1 year, that's going to be a 25% reduction in what we can spend locally because we can't make up the difference, right? Will be a significant impact that's untenable. If we're struggling with 30 kids in a classroom, we're going to really struggle with 40 kids in a classroom. So it's just deeper. I believe in us being as sharp as we can with the costs we're spending on education. I believe in rewarding people that have new ideas on how to deliver education, but it's time to have those very serious conversations, and this budget lets us do that. So those of you that are going to get mad at me about how incredible Dunleavy's budget is for that conversation, it is a great document for that conversation to occur. You're absolutely right. We have to have that conversation. So will you result in a 25% cut this year? Probably not. Is it time for you to come forward with better ideas on how to deliver education at a lower cost in the state of Alaska? Absolutely. So for that, look at that document, take it seriously, and help us with those ideas. I think it's extremely important.
Yep. Can I add to that? I would just say that you've got bright, shiny spots within most organizations, including school districts. So let's identify what works and duplicate it. The second part of that would be I hear from teachers that the problem is not in the schools, it's in the homes. Okay, so let's if you're looking for a legislative fix to that, it's probably not, doesn't exist. What we need is more participation. We need parents to care and to get involved in schools, and we need a structure within our schools that supports parental control and reinforces parental control and responsibility for our own schools.
Amen. I would like to note one thing. I like my PFD. I want you all to know that. But if it means a few years with it being cut in half so that we can continue our school education and other things like having Mr. Janess as my art teacher who has helped me through some of the hardest times in my life, or having 15 students in my language arts class so that I can actually learn, I would like that to happen. Even though that it might not happen today, maybe cutting it in half for a little bit just to get that money out there so that we can actually support our students and not try and balance the education on the backs of students. So maybe it's not necessarily cutting money out. Maybe it's taking our PFD and making it a little bit smaller for a few years.
The only thing I want to add is I love when students speak. We had a certain student that testified. She's on the student representative on the school board who sort of leans in my direction on, hey, like the result, do what you can to bring the cost down. Let's improve where we can in places sort of we're all saying the same thing, right? But she spoke at Senate Finance, and I kind of had to get her to come up because I had to go to another meeting, and she was shy to come up. She was amazing. And thank you. You should stand up. Thank you for serving and for...
Thank you. Melody Jordan, I'm from Seward. And I came over today to support our teachers in their long battle with no contract. But today, and in listening to all of you, I think I applaud you on the crime bill. And I think crime, education, and health care all go together. And I'm going to offer up, because you said, hey, help us. So back when I came to Alaska in the early 70s, there was a tax. It was a school tax. I believe it was $10. And it came out of your paycheck. On the very first paycheck you got, you went to school. I was just a young kid, and I'm like, well, I don't have any kids. I don't have any kids here. But I wonder why that tax was repealed and if we couldn't reinstate it. And maybe now, I think my first paycheck I was making $3.91 an hour. But I think if we could reinstate that tax at maybe a higher amount, and that would help our education. The other thing is the marijuana tax. I know Colorado and Washington and Oregon, there are several states. Can we not, is that not new funds generated? I haven't looked at the budget, so I don't know if there's a budgeted revenue for that. But if there is, could that go to crime and education and health care? The third suggestion, and I'm going to ask you if you know anything about this, is the State of Alaska Mental Health Trust. And I haven't looked deep into that either, but as I understand it, there's a significant amount of money in there, and it seems to me that mental health can also relate to crime and health, mental health, and education. So if you could look into those things, and if you know why that tax was repealed, if you do know. Thank you.
Sure. I can, just for your information, the cannabis tax dollars, which is a little over $20 million a year right now, is going into education programs and other related costs. So I think it's being used, part of it is being used for after school programs on helping to educate kids about perhaps not becoming cannabis taxpayers in the future. So the school that woman just said a cat chasing its tail. The school tax, I don't know why it was repealed, because we came into more money than we could ever spend, except we spent more than we ever had, and that's how we got in this situation, right? I don't know what kind of support there would be for that. Those are the conversations we're going to have, though, right? That was a minimal tax that went to a specific reason. Of course, you can't dedicate funds into a specific program, but really you kind of can, because we know why it was brought in and we know where it's going. The Mental Health Trust already spends, I mean, that is our provider for mental health in the state of Alaska, and it's a land trust that earns its own funds. They have their own separate budget, and they bring it in, and that's what they use those funds for. I can send you that document if you want to get with Conrad on what they use it for. They put an annual report out, and then they have their own budget. Are they the most effective that they could possibly be in every case? Probably not. I think there are some improvements that can occur. But everyone's adjusting specifically to the opioid crisis, right? I mean, this, if you look at what happened in the Appalachians, and I have a... If you have a time... And I'm sorry I keep pushing this book, because on the crime issue and everything else, this helps so much on understanding kind of what happened. If you have time to read this book, you can't have this one, Dope Sick. It's really a great book, but everyone's reeling from that across the country, and that's where we're going to need the most support. We continue to say that people have become addicts because of treatment for a pain or an injury, In Alaska, my argument is we keep talking about these social issues in silos. Again, earlier I said suicide, substance abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse of minors. We're number one in all those categories. What you're seeing is people that are hiding a different kind of pain, right? And we have serious issues, but that is what the trust does, and we have a lot of work to do. But I can we can send you that report if you want to give us. I mean, you can go on their website as well. We have an enormous amount of great information from the state, but it's a battle we're going to continue to fight, and we hope with some of these crime bills that we can short-circuit a better result.
Thanks. I would just like to say thank you for bringing forward your suggestions. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't pan out, the concept of bringing forward ideas, brainstorming, and finding solutions needs to happen. And it's you look to us to have all the answers, and we're only two. You are a bunch. Mm-hmm. And this is where the answers need to come from. It's our government, right? Not my government. It's our government. This is the problem that we're looking at. I brought another prop specifically for this. Here's the solutions, right? Somewhere between what we're funding our government with and the expenses is a solution that's likely going to be painful and uncomfortable and a lemon, right? We got to figure out what the right balance is. I'm just a simple guy, right? I grow peonies. We gotta find the right solution and realize that it's not going to be pleasant, but we need to right the ship. We need to do what needs to be done for the long-term health of the state, right? Even if it's sour. Yeah,
exactly. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Hello. Faye Harold here from Seward. I was asked by a lot of folks to bring a lot of concerns. I'm a retired nurse, 30 years. So health care is a huge concern. And to think that folks should lose their benefits because surgeons want to charge five times more for a procedure here than they do in Seattle is absurd. So we don't balance it on the backs of the little guy because they're not responsible for the over-exorbitant prices that everybody's willing to charge our citizens. The same goes for education. Yeah, it costs more here. We have huge amounts, child abuse, sexual abuse, drug abuse. We have outlying communities that are difficult to reach. So now we want to isolate them more by cutting our ferry system. The budget makes no sense for the average citizen unless we do something about revenue, right? And you've said that, and I've heard that. I was born in the territory of Alaska. I was born before there were oil companies here. And this myth that they will leave if we want them to contribute more to their wealth is absurd. They make $17 a barrel profit in our state. Most places in the world, $1 or $2 a barrel profit. They are raping our natural resources.
You are over a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe so. The question is then revenue. We need to increase their contribution to our state and their unimaginable wealth, and we do need to break away from it. We have so many avenues of revenue.
You need to wrap it up.
Okay, now. Revenue. Don't just expect us all to balance
Thank
it on
you.
The backs
Thank
of the poor.
The
revenue.
I didn't hear one, so I won't answer one.
Yeah, give me a break. I stammer a bit. Anyways, I'm here for off the subject on the other things. I work for the Alaska Marine Highways. I don't want to be one of the ones that's going to be the crew members that is going to be ending the Alaska Marine Highways. I'm here for me, for my shipmates, and the shoreside people that have to deal with the Marine Highways. What is your thing about supporting the Alaska Marine Highways that goes through 32 to 36 ports, and they in the communities that support the Marine Highways, and you say you're the now on the Committee of the Transportation please enlighten us about the situation on the Marine highways now. As of October, we're not going to be running. Thank you.
You bet.
So we've got our work cut out for us. Alaska Marine Highway is important. It is not being run in an efficient manner, meaning it costs the state more. We need to solve that problem. If we want to have the service, but we want to continue losing money on it, then where does that take us in 10 years? We've got to fix that problem. So the governor has proposed a solution, and the governor has also said that we are going to, he is going to study ways in which we can make it a profitable or at least a zero cost to the state. It is important to have the Alaska Marine Highway, but it isn't important that we continue losing money on it. So let's find an alternative solution where we don't have to lose money on it.
Well, I can sit down with you too later on if you want to. I could give you some suggestions.
Would love all suggestions.
Love to hear them. I'd like to, so since I had that budget for several years and started the glide path down, mm-hmm. we were essentially spending half of the state budget, Department of Transportation budget, on a marine highway system that about 15-17% of the people in the state were using. So we started that glide path down. And I went to every community that are primary ferry terminals. I said, guys, we're going to glide this down. We can't continue to spend at this level for what we're delivering. We saw ridership going down significantly. We saw the department meeting its costs at a lower and lower and lower level through the years. So I started making cuts, but we made them in conjunction with the communities, in conjunction with the folks from Marine Highway Service. And you didn't notice really much of a service change, did you? We were managing it. It takes a little bit of time. Well, last year, we eventually had to close out, and one final vote for the budget in the House needed $40 million for the Alaska Marine Highway System. So all that work, as we started bringing it down in a way that helped the Marine Highway System continue to operate but bring down their costs over time, we lost $40 million worth of progress, mm-hmm. right? This governor is saying, whether you support it or not, this is what a balanced budget looks like, and it doesn't have a marine highway system in it. Do you think we're probably going to shut down the marine highway system in October? I don't. But it's going to force us to say, how do we get to where it can be a sustainable service over time? What runs can we afford? What runs can the Southeast Conference pick up for privatizing? How do we make this work so that we can deliver the service in a way that we can afford as Alaskans? And that's what we need to progress forward. But moving backward by $40 million last year didn't help anyone. It just exacerbated the problem. So I hope we can keep that progress going to keep the system alive, but in a way that we can actually afford.
I've been with them for 24 years.
Thanks. I'd love to hear what your ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. PFD cuts to cover government spending puts the cost almost entirely on middle to lower income Alaskan families and allows the top 20% of income earners, which is the majority of Alaskan legislatures, and non-residents to escape scot-free. A chart posted by Alaskan for Sustainable Budgets, a family of four in the top 20% income bracket making $250,000 a year, contributing $4,400 from PFDs, only contributes 1.76% of their income. Middle-income earners that make $56,500 around 8%, $32,500 income earners around 14%. A flat tax results in all Alaskans contributing a proportionate share, applies to income received by non-residents, reduces the share of money taken out of the Alaskan private or out of the private sector. If Alaskans decide they want services beyond what Dunleavy's budget offers, who do you suggest should pay for it? Would you be willing to support a flat tax and contribute a proportionate share of your income, or will you push for PFD cuts that puts the cost burden almost entirely on the backs of the middle to lower income Alaska families. Thanks.
I'm ready to sit down, so I'll be.
Well, that's a great question. My first goal is to bring down the cost as low as you can. And if you start injecting new money into a budget before you get to the lowest possible cost, you won't get to the lowest possible cost. So I'm not in favor of doing either. But that's what people are going to have to tell us, because a lot of the services that you enjoy every day are going away. If they're important to you, we need to hear about it. Are senior payments for low-income seniors important to you? Are they?
Yes.
Then there's something that's not constitutionally required that we're paying out. I adjusted that so that all seniors are not getting it any longer, which they were. We took it down to the lowest income seniors. I kind of want grandparents to stay in this state. It's a tough place to live. So that's how I looked at it. We took it away from the highest earners, and we gave it, sorry, high-earning seniors. But that's just reality. So we're going to have to look at all those things and make those tough decisions, but I don't want to add revenue until Alaskans tell us what they can't live without.
One of the things that most frustrated me in the last several years was the concept that I've heard it before, that we can't cut our way out of this. We're still dealing with it, right? The problem is that as soon as you step away from the concept of we can't cut our way out of this, we start looking for more additional forms of revenue, and we don't even try to cut. So if I was to stand here and say, okay, I've got the solution, we're just going to tax our way out of this. We've stopped the conversation about getting more efficient and reducing those services that are not necessary or can be done in a different manner, a different way that costs us less in the long run. Do I support a flat tax over other types of taxes? I think so at this point in time. Do I think it's necessary at this point in time? I don't think so. I'm certainly not going to stand here and tell you that that's what I think the solution is, because it's not. Do I think everybody needs their dividend? No, not everybody needs a dividend. Do I think that when we cut the dividend, we're hurting the people who actually need it the most? Yes, I do. It's an all of the above approach that we're going to have to look at. The bottom line is, our revenue does not match our expenses. A new tax has consequences. Government spending has consequences. Cutting government spending has consequences. Taking the PFD has consequences. There's nothing here that's going to be painless. The only option that we have that's painless in the long run is to increase our economy such that we have more revenue coming into the state. That's it. It is a revenue versus spending discussion. Revenue that you're taking out of tax, if you increase a tax somewhere within the current economy, has a negative consequence for that economy. So we're going to find a balance to this problem that we have, which is a spending versus income problem.
So I don't normally do the third comment on one question, which you guys are hearing enough answers, but that's such an important part of this discussion. Because a lot of the lower income people you're talking about are the ones that are going to suffer the most when the lower income programs are eliminated. So for an $1,100 dividend difference, some of them are going to be losing $20,000 and $30,000 worth of services. And if you're a disabled Alaskan that can't work, ouch, right? That's part of the balance. So the way you personally talked about that mix, if we're going to guarantee a full dividend, which I've committed to, then some of the very folks that you're worried about are going to lose services, folks that can't work for a living, right? So we live in a state where less than half of us work. We're spending $12,000 per Medicaid recipient. You're talking about a major impact to a lot of Alaskans. We need to know the priority. Is the priority the $1,100? Are we going to start pushing able-bodied Alaskans to provide for themselves? I hope so. I strongly believe in that. I want them to succeed. I want them to be wildly successful. I don't want them to depend on public assistance. I don't want them to depend on Medicaid forever. I want them to do what they can to do the best for themselves and their families. Some of the programs we've paid out have not been motivational for some folks. They've been comfortable not being the best they can be, right? Not accomplishing the most they can accomplish. So that's all part of the mix. What's most important to all of you, right? Do we not want our seniors to, low-income seniors, to have a little bit of a boost? And it's not much of one anymore. Those are tough questions. I've normally protected the disabled, I've protected seniors the best that I could. I reduced the payments, like I said earlier, for those that can afford it. But those are tough questions, and they will all have, as Ben said, there's a cause and effect for each one of those decisions. We're trying to make decisions that have the least negative effect on the greater pool of Alaskans, and it's just really it's a tough equation.
Just really briefly, I know that you want to ask a question. I just want to follow up with this for 1 second. We continue to talk about cutting versus spending, and this is a no-win situation, right? There's always sides on either side of that argument that are going to feel the pain. Why don't we have a conversation about what's not in that conversation? Is there another way to get the same results that we're looking to government to get? There used to be a time when we didn't look to our government to take care of our elderly. So what does that look like? What does that look like? I'm not suggesting a direction, right? I'm just throwing something up on the wall. What does that look like? If we weren't to look to our government for the solution to meet the needs, what would that look like? Is that even an option on the table for the public right now? If it isn't, then maybe it should be. Let's stop looking to the government for our solutions and look to ourselves to start taking care of our neighbors and our families, and then that decreases the expense that goes into government. There you go. Your question.
Hi, my name is Jessica Perry. I'm an 8th grader at Nikiski Middle High School. All through our lives, we're taught to invest. You'll need it for college. You'll need to invest in your education. If we need to invest in our education, then I believe that the state and the district need to invest in it financially as well. Over an 8-year span, 2/3 of Alaskan students who graduated attended some form of second education, and including Alaska Institution, and continue to live here today, estimating that most of us will do the same. As long as the borough and the state continue to financially support us now, we will be able to financially support them in the future. Success breeds further success. If sports, teachers, extracurricular activities are cut, are students going to enjoy school as much? Out of 30 middle school students asked, 73% of students said they would care less about grades in school if they took away things like sports. Students are the future, and our education matters. Cutting teachers would impact us all. Teachers affect us. They inspire us. They devote their time to make sure we become amazing people. Teachers, sports, extracurricular activities, and other things that will be cut are necessary to our education. In conclusion, we believe that if these cuts are made, it will drastically impact the amount of students who enjoy school and will decrease academic performance. So how are we going to take into account these students and these teachers' futures around the state?
Well, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for the question, which I think is excellent. That's exactly what we're doing. We're taking that into account in every decision. If we hadn't been, which is the only department that was not cut through all of the, remember that slide that showed the decrease in spending? May not be enough for some of you, but we did decrease from FY13. Education was kept whole. And some of you may not agree with that because you might have wanted to see an increase, but everybody was getting a pretty drastic reduction when education was staying pretty flat. So it is a priority of ours, and that is something that I look at in every decision. That doesn't mean I don't support that we do a better job at a lower cost in the future. I think we have to do that. So that's part of the struggle. But it's a great question. Thank you.
As ugly as it is at times, we are engaging in the process to make that right decision. Do we get it right every time? No. Do we get it wrong sometimes? Yeah. But this is the process by which we engage to do exactly that.
Hi, my name is Jasmine, and I'm an eighth grader at Nikiski Middle High School. I guess my question is, how are people going to help students find their purpose and their reason to go to school and try hard if we take away their reasons now? We are going to expect them to change their reasons, change their purpose, to find another solution, but I'm just curious how we're going to give them a purpose or help them find their purpose.
Again, I think that's a great question. I'm not going to use his props. So I have bowls with me. We have to try to deliver constitutionally required services. And I'll tell you, one of the challenges we're going to have is if we cut education too low, there will be a court challenge to, are you adequately delivering educational services in the state of Alaska? And some of you are saying, well, that's nonsense. We can win that one. We've already lost a big one, the Kasaili case. I don't know how many of you know about that case. And it was a group of Native Alaskan Mike Navarre leave. I think he might have been in the legislature at that point, but we were challenged. It went to the Supreme Court. We were not delivering an adequate level of education in a few extreme rural communities. We lost the case. There's a certain level we have to get to, and there's a certain level we can't get below before we can't adequately deliver education. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be evaluating game changers that bring down the cost and have a better result. We have to do that every day. We do it every day at home. We do it every day in our businesses. And we have to do it with government. I was in an interview with Senator Geisel yesterday, and she used a great analogy. What we've done for the last few years is kind of like when I ask my kids to clean their room. I ask them to clean their room. I go in there. It looks great. I open the closet door, and all the stuff comes tumbling down out of there. We've stuffed away our problems, and we've burned through $13 billion in savings in the meantime. We have to evaluate the best way to deliver education at the lowest cost possible, while still providing some of those things that matter so much to you. I have two kids in the borough, in the district here. I love the fact that one of them is in Quest, which probably costs a little bit more money, right? Maybe when there are extra services, as Ben said, maybe some of us parents that are enjoying that they can't afford it should be expected to help with some of those costs. Let's look at some of those solutions and try to bring the cost down where we can.
I think your question about finding purpose, I was late into my adult life before I fully understood my purpose. Keep looking. I don't mean to lie about that. That's a good question, and it's probably a very important question for you to answer. Whether you find that find yourself in one particular school or another, with one particular teacher or another, those are just tools for you to help find your purpose. Finding your purpose is not only going to come from what you find, who you know, and what you learn in school. There are a lot of other things out there that'll help you find your purpose. So keep an open mind and keep looking for that purpose.
David Brighton, thank you for coming and letting us have this conversation. I want to start by saying it's easy to suggest making cuts, deep cuts. Let's all cut the budget. I don't want to pay tax. I want my PFD. That's an easy statement. I appreciate the poll that you have and the raising hands in the room, because I can see what you described. You know, you said earlier 60% is a landslide. It looks to me like a landslide of people here and responding. are interested in not seeing cuts to education. When the governor suggests cutting 25%, the district has to react to that. So right now we're considering closing schools, losing sports programs, losing the pools that the community enjoys, losing the theaters. Those are deep, hard cuts. One of the other impacts is, as contracts are going out to teachers right now, the district won't be able to offer as many contracts. So my question is, when the governor suggests a 25% cut, and you said the municipalities can raise taxes to make the difference, the state statute limits the amount the municipality
I didn't say that. If I didn't make it clear, there's okay. a cap on what the localities can, so it's actually, it
Correct.
Exacerbates the cut.
So my question is, how does the school district or the borough make up the cut?
Well, they can't. It's illegal, and it's actually federal legislation that makes it illegal because of equal quality education between poor and areas that aren't poor in the country. So it's problematic. There's no question about it. Was that your only question? Did I miss one?
Out of time.
Okay.
I'll respect the one that
you can go back around.
My name is Barbara McNinch, and I'm 63 years old and looking at being a low-income senior, despite the fact that I feel I have done everything correct. When I was 45, I became an occupational therapist and worked in the schools here, retiring a couple years ago, but I am only retired in name. I'm still working. I know that you guys have an ear to the governor, and I know governors can band together. There's 15 of the states that have the Social Security windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset, which is severely penalizing people like myself. I have lost almost all my Social Security from age 16 to 45, and there's a bill right now. It's been out for years and years and years, but never gets pushed through. And I just wanted to use this platform to bring that up again and hope that the two of you become familiar with this and are able to speak to the governor about it.
So I'm... Richard, I appreciate if you can have them send them to both of us if you're handing out cards, or take both cards so that we can help answer these questions later as well. I know nothing about that issue, to be perfectly honest. It sounds like a federal issue. So I don't know what the governor's role is in that legislation, but we'll evaluate it and learn what we can and get an answer to you.
We're taking notes off to the side. So if you make contact with us, we'll know how to get back in touch with you.
It's called the offset provision of Social Security. And essentially what happens is, if you get a state pension of any kind, or a public pension of any kind, or railroad pension of any kind, then your Social Security amounts, even though you earned the Social Security 40 quarters away from the city or state or school or whatever, because you, quote, don't need the money because you're getting a provision, your Social Security payments will be cut by anywhere from 50% to 30%.
Well, what I do know is that the state opted out of Social Security, so right. none of the state employees received them in this
right.
state. So,
right.
No, this is a situation where me as a state employee maybe had an earlier career of 20 years where I was getting into Social Security, and because now that you're in a situation where you're getting a retirement pension, they reduce the amount that would be coming to you in Social Security.
So we'll turn to Richard to learn about that, so Conrad isn't doing the same thing, and we will get. So you all know Conrad Jackson. He's on my staff. Just so you know. And then you want to introduce Richard?
Yeah, so Richard Best is my chief of staff, local boy, living in Palmer now.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Lou Height. Ooh, sorry about that. I have a small farm in Nikiski called Eagle Glade. The present budget has completely zeroed out the Department of Agriculture. And I want to know what in the world the governor was smoking when he did that.
You have spoken, and he has spoken about increasing economic base and food security, and here he goes cutting the legs out from under one of the most dynamic new economic areas in the state of Alaska, from Tok to Bethel to the Kenai Peninsula to down on the Panhandle. Agriculture is vibrant and lively, and we need that department to help us develop techniques and methods and markets that are suitable to our climate, which is very unusual in the United States. The peony growers, bless their hearts, brilliant, brilliant new market, new crop, very, very profitable. Can't even sell abroad without having a state agricultural inspection. And they're not, you know, they're scared. I was just at a meeting of women in agriculture this morning, and the peony growers were really, really scared. Please revisit that. This budget, by the way, I'm going to call it by the name that some of you may remember from back in the old days. It's called zero-based budgeting, and it was a total failure under Jimmy Carter, and I think it's going to wind up a total failure here. Bye-bye.
So as a peony farmer, I do understand the cuts to agriculture are not something that is in the state's best interest. I would be interested to hear from you how specifically the Department of Agriculture cuts, and it wouldn't be at this time, but at another time, I would like to know specifically how that impacts you and your farm. I know how it impacts peony growers and shipping outside the country. I don't actually have to get inspections to send flowers to the lower 48, but in two places that need a biological inspection, I would need it, and it does have to be a state agency to do that. So I am aware of that, but I want to know specifically what it is that out of the things that are being cut, how that would impact you.
And the only reason I'm going to touch on that a little bit is because here's what I think happened. This is why I think this budget document is so important. I know that agriculture is important to Governor Dunleavy. He's from the Valley. I know it's very important to him, right? I think, so why should fish taxes go to communities that fish? Why should oil and gas taxes go to communities that are managing oil and gas facilities? That budget makes everyone mad. And what happens when people get mad? They talk about... Well, that's what we're doing. We're gathering people together and talking about how we're going to steer this ship and how we're going to survive this in the future. And I think that's the most important. I'm taking it very positively. My wife hates when I do that. We've been at so many events where people say, what do you think about Governor Dunleavy's budget? I love it. What in there bothers you, and how do you want to talk about it? What's important to you? That's what we need to know. So I agree with you. We grew 50% of our locally consumed crops in the 50s and 60s. We grow 4% today. We can do so much better. We can employ so many more Alaskans with locally grown produce, peonies, I want to help do that. What is the government's role? Is it the government's role to fund ASME so that we can market our fish overseas? And what's the right balance? It's time for that discussion.
Hey, thanks for coming here. I heard both of you talk about agriculture from Kisilov, Alaska, a thriving Alaska in the future with economic diversification. I heard Mr. Carpenter talk about a long-term economic model. I think some of those models may be a lower 48 model that may not fit Alaska. I think we have a different state up here. But all those things are going to take time. In the meanwhile, how do we not start the Dunleavy death spiral for our economy, where we lose jobs and people start leaving the state, something that we can't stop? So my question for you is this. I keep hearing all of the above. All of the above is on the table. But every time it comes around to revenue, all of the above doesn't seem to be on the table. There seems to be a negative connotation that the revenue side, raising revenue from Alaska, asking Alaskans to be contributors, is not on the table. My question to you, when you say all of the above, is revenue from Alaskans asking them to be contributors to their state on the table.
Of course it's on the table.
Thank you.
It has to be.
Thank you.
At the proper time, it is absolutely on the table. Hang on a second. Hang on.
Come on, there's only so many hours left. Oh, and I would suggest on the time limits, we got a time limit.
Sorry. You don't get to make that suggestion, but thank you.
I've been trying.
It absolutely has to be on the table at some point. But first, we have to understand priorities, or we're going to fund everything all the time. And you know what? There are not enough Alaskans to pay the difference. There are not enough. And why should only working Alaskans pay for the services? If you don't ask the question of what's the priority, only working Alaskans are going to pay for every service. We have to prioritize first, and I'm more than willing to have that discussion.